Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game.
One of Scotland's all-time top scorers, Kenny Miller, joins Lewis Irons and Greg Patterson on the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast to discuss his coaching journey.
Another edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Myself, Lewis Irons, joined by Greg Patterson, as always, from the Scottish FA. And our guest this week doesn't need much of an introduction, does he, Greg? A playing career which has taken him from Scotland to Turkey, England to Canada, now, of course, in a coaching capacity out in Australia. It's a pleasure to have Kenny Miller join us. Kenny, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
No problem. Good to be on it. Looking forward to it.
Greg, I said that he doesn't need much of an introduction.
He's got the longest Wikipedia page in the world, Lewis. He's got the longest Wikipedia page ever.
He's going for a while here, but no, it's of someone of Kenny's experience, his calibre in the game, it's great to have him on the podcast, particularly when it comes to talking about our coaching, but also the wider picture of football at the moment when it's all shut down.
It's fantastic. I've been back to Scottish FA for over 4 years now, and unfortunately I've not crossed Kenny's path much, and this has just been, you know, just with the things that have happened in Kenny's own career over the past 3 years. He did the B&A licence prior to that, but, you know, now talking about doing the pro licence, and now that he's in, you know, coaching over in Australia currently, and, you know, had a spell at Livingston, etc. So no, he's definitely in that realm now after a fantastic playing career.
Kenny, we were chatting before we came on the podcast here. Obviously, you managed to get back home when you were out in Australia when all this chaos began and the game and the football shutdown started. I'm sure you're relieved to be back home, but you touched on the fact you're itching to get back to it. But on a personal note, how are you finding everything, all these challenges at the moment?
Well, it was disappointing for it to actually end the way it did, because we had only been in the job about 6, 7, 8 weeks, and things were really going well, you know, so that the team really responded to what the manager wanted to achieve. A really, really good group we've got, and we pretty much picked up straight away, picked up results straight away. We had 7 games, we only lost one, won 4, drew 2, so everything was going pretty well, considering when any coach or manager gets a job mid-season, it's pretty much because the team's been struggling, really. So obviously the team were toiling and were at the bottom of the table when we went in, and we've seen an immediate response, you know, and it's all credit to the boys. They were absolutely excellent for the first session when we're in, you know, they really responded to the manager, the way he wanted to play, the way he worked on a daily basis, and we've seen an immediate impact in the results. The team was actually playing pretty well. What was really evident was there were some really good players there, and they were just missing a little bit of confidence and a little bit of luck. And that's one thing the manager's very, very good at, is getting players on side and believing in what they're doing and instilling a confidence and a belief in them. And that said, we've seen an immediate response. So fast forward kind of 7 games, like I say, we won 4, we drew 2, and we lost just the 1. A game we actually shouldn't have lost, but we lost it anyway. And managed to pick up 14 points for the 7 games we had. And we went for the bottom of the league to having a wee bit of an outside sniff and making the playoffs. So it was disappointing the way it had to, how abruptly it came to an end. But obviously, with everything that's going on in the world, it takes a bit of a backseat, football does. So yeah, itching to get back out, but it was good to get back in and see the family after not seeing them for a few months.
I was going to say, from a family side of things, I'm sure as they hadn't made that move out, it's in a way, if you look at the positives of it, you're back with the family, you get that time with them that you don't often get in football. You'll know that throughout your career. So I guess it's trying to probably look at the positives in what is ultimately a difficult situation.
It's real difficult. I mean, it's the same. Obviously, everybody's in the same boat at the moment in terms of on the lockdown and being stuck indoors. But I mean, again, the kids are actually loving it. They've not got school, which is trying to homeschool them as much as possible, which is a bit. I think I would rather go a 5K run than actually sit and do kind of homeschooling. But it's. It's what it is. I mean, that's been 5, 6 weeks now, so it's kind of flying by. We see some light at the end of the tunnel in regards to maybe restrictions lifted, as long as it can be done safely. And like I say, it's like the situation in Australia is maybe not quite as bad as what it's been over here, thankfully. So there may be a little bit light at the end of the tunnel in terms of getting back to work over there. So the plan will be to get out there with the family this time, which was always the plan anyway, to finish the season off and start the next season to head up with the family. So we might be doing that a little bit earlier. So again, just waiting on the green light for that. But like you say, it's good to be back. It was a real relief to get back and see the family, because there was a wee spell there where we wasn't quite sure if, I mean, flights were really difficult to come by. So I was just really fortunate to manage to get one within a couple of days of the actual league finishing.
Yeah. I'm going to get started on things, because obviously, Greg, you made a wee joke about it, but there's so much that we want to get through with your career, Kenny.
We could do a three-parter.
You say we might chop it up. We can maybe just start at the beginning and go all the way through. I wonder if this will record long enough, but we'll see. Let's go back to the earliest kind of stages, Kenny, and I'm talking before you've turned professional at a young age. I'm talking as a young boy growing up. Who were your early kind of inspirations in football? Was it a case of growing up and having people around you and your immediate family that inspired you into the game?
Absolutely. I mean, that was my dad initially. I mean, my dad was he was actually a really, really good player. And never quite made the grade. And then he had a real long and kind of successful kind of career in the junior kind of amateur setup. He was quite a welfare, Armiston Rangers, Ormiston, all these kind of teams kind of round about that Edinburgh area. And he done well. He managed as well. He managed Whitehall, Dunbar as well. So it was him initially when he was playing. I was young. You're probably thinking 4, 5, 6 years old, where I just wanted to go along and watch him and half times of the games, before the games, go on the pitch and have a wee kick about with other kids that were there watching and things. And that was pretty much the first kind of memories I've got, really, of football, aside if you've been out in the garden or out in the street just kicking a ball about. And again, it's that initially, and then as I got a bit older and you start to take an interest in supporting teams and what have you. I mean, Alton Super Ali was an absolute idol of mine, and it took a wee bit of time before I actually developed into a striker. I mean, I always seen myself as a forward, always wanted to be scoring goals and things, but my first kind of foray into any organised team was a good friend of mine's dad with the kind of the local team of Dinah Hibs, and I went in and played in the team, and I was a bit younger, so it was just a case of finding a position. So initially, I think I played right back and left back, but funnily enough, I can remember I played left back one game and I still managed to get 2 goals, you know, so I must have been venturing forward and just thinking I'm going for this. So, but I think it was the next year, really, once I was playing at the right age, I then made a, I started to kind of move further forward and play up front with a local team, and then moved on to Hutchie Vale, which were a real successful Edinburgh team, and that was as a striker, and pretty much for then on always played in that position. But yep, because once I've seen myself as a forward, I always looked to forward. So it was Alan McCoist, it was Alan Shearer when I was a wee bit older, Ian Wright, these kind of guys were real idols of mine, you know. So it was again, like I said, being a striker and just loving scoring goals, that was the kind of guys that I kind of looked to.
Yeah, it kind of touches on the message that we've spoke about a few times, Greg, where I don't know about you, but it seems like most people that play the game at a young age, they'll get shoehorned into all sorts of positions. Everyone's probably played fullback at some point, but of course, Kenny made the transition to a striker, and what a career that followed.
Yeah, that did strike me when Kenny was chatting there. That, you know, that idea has that, you know, he said it took a wee while until he developed into a striker, you know, and I think I've mentioned it before, but thinking back to the masterclass, the midfield masterclass we did back in December, alongside the performance department in the Scottish FA, and, you know, with Paul Scholes, Darren Fletcher and Scott Brown, you know, that spoke that day about their own careers. And, you know, none of them made their first team debuts in positions they thought they would make their first team debuts, or are even now still playing and as recognised as they are in those positions. So it's, you know, I don't want to get too romantic about it, but is it a wee bit like the, you know, the Dutch model of total football, but it's just been involved in that football environment. And Kenny talks about that fantastically well. And you see that when parents are involved in the game, and they, you know, the kids got to go along, because football is just so, we talk about it often here, don't we? It's just that, just such a busy life being in football. And Kenny's dad sounds as if he did that busy life in football. Kenny was just brought along, you know, just come on, Kenny, we're going to football, go along, and he'll kick about as he says at half time and full time, probably be kicking around the changing room. So just everything is just football, 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 that develops that passion and love affair with the game.
Of course, growing up in Edinburgh, Kenny, that opportunity when it arrives, you go to Hibs, and you make your first team debut in 1997 under, was it Jim Duffy that was there at the time as well? So I'm sure, what that experience like getting that first opportunity in a first team?
Well, it was. I mean, again, I'd been involved with Hibs pretty much since I was 12. Yep. As I was quite a few other teams, as like all kids do, they get invited to go and do the night training sessions or the holiday training sessions with different teams. But Hibs was the constant, to be fair, from about 12. And it was Parky. It was wee Parky who, at that moment, I think he took the reserves at Hibs. He took the youth team. He probably took the under-12s, 13s, 14s and 15s. The wee man done everything, you know. So any time I went on the school holidays, pretty much over that 3-4 year period, wee Parky was the one that would be taking us. So I was given a real good insight and grounding into the game from Parky. And I know a lot of lads will say that, who have came through that youth setup at Hibs when Parky was heavily involved. So, but it was actually a real signing. I mean, I know when I was at school, it was the S forms, the schoolboy forms. And I had so many, been playing at Hutchie, which is obviously one of the most recognised boys clubs in the country. All my kind of teammates were all being kind of signed up, and they were on, whether it be Hearts or Hibs or Dundee United or Rangers or Celtic. And there was a few guys had went down south. I think boy Gary Mason had went to Man City. Andy Porteous had went in Notts Forest. Rival at Tynecastle, you had Keith Brown, who had went to Blackburn. Alex Notman had went to Man United. So everybody seemed to have an association. I mean, I had an association and affiliation with Hibs, but there was no commitment there. So it was actually in the 95-96 season. So it was my kind of last year before I could potentially leave school. I don't know who was it sorted, if it was SFA or what, if it was just the senior clubs got together, but they started the kind of senior team league at under 16 level. So Rangers, Hearts, Hibs, Celtic, Aberdeens, Dundee United, all these teams, they put an under 16 team together, and they were taking players away for the boys clubs, and they were going to be playing in this league. So I played in it with Hibs and done pretty well over the course of the year. Again, Parky took the team, obviously. So it wasn't until about, I'm sure it was about February, March time, and I left school in that June, that Parky had kind of spoke to me and says, look, they want to take me on full time. So it was only really a wee 3-4 month window prior to me kind of agreeing to do it, and then actually being in, going into full time. But obviously I was delighted, because I never seen any, pretty much, once you get that bit older and you're in school, I mean, I was actually okay at school. I was pretty good. I've not a bad head on my shoulder, not a bad brain academically, but I could never see myself doing anything else, you know. I just wanted to be a footballer. I'd completely dedicated myself to doing it and worked hard to get it. And I know I wasn't the best, but I put a lot of work in, and even when you went in full time. So that opportunity to get in full time, I just never seen myself doing anything else. So it was great to go. Alex Miller was the first manager there. Obviously, Parky worked closely there. So it was great to get in, and what a feeling to. Then I'd been in the year before, doing pre-season when I was 15. I'd done pre-season that year with the first team over the school holidays. So I'd had a wee insight in it and helped with the jobs and things run about the place. So it was it just added to the feeling that's what I wanted to do, you know. So the next year, actually being in it as a full-time professional was great.
In the time that I've been working in football, Greg, I've found that quite incredible at times when some of the people that I've spoke to that have said that. Kenny's been completely honest in his assessment, where he thought maybe technically I wasn't the best at that age, but I had that drive. And that seems to be, for the guys that go on to achieve the most, is a common theme that they recognise, where maybe I've had to work harder here, and that's where you get to the levels you do, having that knowledgeable head on your shoulders to think, I need to work here or there.
Aye, and it's probably that mindset again, isn't it, that we spoke about, I think, in previous episodes as well, Lewis, that drive and determination comes from having the right mindset. You know, Kenny's probably got stories of boys he thought were maybe better than him when he was 13, 14, 15, but, you know, never made a career the way Kenny's made a career, and it might have been because the mindset was different, never put in as much work as they did. But you're right, it's fascinating for Kenny to look back as well. You know, he talks about the old Scottish schoolboy forms that, you know, and I was one of them myself at Celtic, and it's just brilliant to reminisce about those times as well.
Well, you know what's interesting, that guys, what you're saying, because for me, I've always been quite strong-willed, and probably again, even Parky would agree with that, and anybody that's worked with me would testify to that. But always, I remember not too long ago, I think it was Steven Gerrard had just finished off playing and he was doing an interview on BT and whatever, and he kept talking about when he was breaking through and how he just seen people in his way and he needed to move them out of the way. If he wanted to make it and he wanted to make it into that first team, he needed to move people out of the way, and that could be younger players who were maybe in the year or 2 years before him, but it could have been a first team player that he had his eye on the first team and he needed to move like seasoned pros out of the way. And I remember going back and we had a couple of forwards who were a year or two older than me that were in the year or two before me, and it's a daunting place back then, you know. I mean, football's a harsh, I mean, it's a harsh business for young lads and it's real tough to make it. I mean, you either sink or swim, and if you get in there, I mean, I've always had a bit of like a bit about me and things, and I just went in there and I wanted to work hard and I wanted to make it, and I wanted to make it quickly. I always remember when I used to go down to the bowling green, my dad bowled, or if I was going down to the snooker club, I wanted to get there quickly. So I would run there, you know. So when I got in, I wanted to make it quickly. I wanted to get into that first team. Initially, I wanted to become a starter on the youth team, then you want to get into the reserves, and then you want to make it into that first team, and I wanted to stay there, you know. And I see guys that were there, and as like I said, it's quite a daunting environment there, because what you're doing is you're actually up again, as much as these guys are your peers, and you become really, really friendly with them. But you're up against them as well. You know, there was two forwards that I say that were older and they were good forwards, they were good players. But I needed to move them out of the way. You know, I needed to jump ahead of them. And when I got into that ad, then you had guys like Stevie Crawford and Barry Lavetti and then Mixu Patalainen came as well, and Dirk Lehman. I needed to move them out of the way. You know, and I needed to get in ahead of them and show that I was worthy of a starting slot ahead of these guys, you know. And that's something that, it's that kind of single mind, is that drive just to, like, no matter what, you need to work, you know, you need to put the work in. And whether that's in the training, whether that's doing your jobs, you know, I always took pride in doing my jobs, you know, whether that's scrubbing the floors or doing, listen, it was horrible. With all that old Easter Road Stadium, it's disgusting, you know, but you're cleaning the showers, you're cleaning the toilets, you're doing the boots. Like, I used to love doing the boots and making sure they were absolutely gleaming. I done Pat McGinley and John Yogi Hughes' boots. I used to love, like, take real pride in it, get it done and then go and practice, whether it be under the stand playing head tennis or playing a bit two-touch or doing a bit of practice, shooting practice or whatever it was. I just like getting things done, took good pride and moved on, you know. So it was, I've always kind of been that way. That, and if it's not working in the same token, then I'll look to maybe move on to somewhere that will work, you know, because I've never been somebody just to kind of sit back and accept sitting watching football, you know.
Yeah, and that's why I say it's so interesting reminiscing things like that, Kenny, because I remember cleaning the boots and even painting walls at Celtic Park and different things like that. Do you think that bit of the game's missing now? Do you think that kind of formative years of doing jobs like that is missing? Do you think?
I think it is, because what it does is it gives you a real, see when you get out of it, it gives you an appreciation. Again, if you've got the right mindset, it gives you an appreciation that, by the way, I want to get away from that, you know. I don't want to, just because, again, initially when you start out, as you would have done as well, whether it be YTS or at Hibs, it was ground staff, like, you've got that 2 years that you maybe sign initially, that's all you're getting, you know. You're getting that YTS years and that ground staff years. So to earn the pro years, you need to work your way through it, you know. But once you get through it, you look back and you think, you know, I'm glad I'm out of that, you know. So there's an appreciation for what you're actually doing. So you go in and you do your work and you don't have all that. But it's a really, really good grounding. I mean, you've got someone like Donald Park. We had Stuart Colley as well. I don't know if you ever came across Stuart. Stuart was a physio. And he was really, really harsh on the lads as well, you know. So there was a real grounding into being a footballer through Parky, the harsh kind of realities of youth football as well, where everybody's, you're playing in teams together, but you're all competing against each other for that contract, you know. At the end of that 2 years, there might be X-Men again. That was the hardest part of the year, come the end of the year, when everybody had to go up to see Parky or up to see Alex Miller and see if you were getting the contract to stay on. And we're all sitting in the Easter Road dressing room, and as each one goes up, come, I'm away. Yeah, I got a year, or, you know, it was a hard, hard time. So you're all competing against each other ultimately, as well as playing with each other. And every single day, from 8 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, till 5, 6 at night, working together as a team, you're also competing against each other to get the opportunity to kick on and move on in your career. So it's tough, but like I said, I'm had the real opportunity to work with top level coach and Wee Parkey to give you everything, you know. And I touched on it the other day with Donald when I was speaking with Donald. That was 96 I started, and the first year I was in there, Parkey had us dietitians, he had us sprint coaches, he had sports psychologists, he had all that stuff there. Everything was there. All the tools were there to give you an opportunity to succeed. And again, that's 25 years ago, 24 years ago, Wee Parkey was looking at doing all that stuff. Whereas it's maybe only really started to filter into the game over the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, you know. So it was, you were given every opportunity. And then you had also had the top level coach that Donald does.
Yeah. And it's interesting you talk about Parkey so passionately, I suppose, because, you know, he's a huge effect in my career, you know, to where I am now as well. And it's just, you've used the word harsh a lot, and it was a harsh environment, but what Parkey's also good at is giving you the cuddle when you needed it and really being a crutch and a support for you and all the rest of the lads that were coming through at that time.
No, absolutely, because this is another thing we touched on the other day, was that, again, if you're smart enough, you know Parkey was hard. Parkey's a winner. He wanted us to win. He wanted us to succeed. He wanted everybody. He would have loved to have seen 5, 6, 7 of us through playing in that same first team, you know. And that was obviously his job, is to get young players through, and he's done it very, very well. But he was also honest, Greg, you know. I'd done a couple of years helping out where I could with the Rangers 20s, and I constantly had chats about thinking, like, I don't think we're being fair to the players, because I don't think we're being totally honest with them about where they're actually at in regards to their progress or where they actually stand or even their opportunities to potentially make it if they continue on the same path. And I look back then, and Parkey was harsh. I listened to his wee podcast with Donald, and he says, oh, I was maybe a wee bit harsh at the start, which I was absolutely howling at, because he was harsh. But he was honest. You know, he was honest. And if you were smart enough, you knew that. You knew he was being honest, and it was for your own benefit. Because you needed to, again, we've talked about it, it's a tough, tough environment. And you guys might have the actual stats, but there's a very, very small percentage of players who actually, young players who go on full-time or are in academies, who actually make it through into a first team. So you need to take every resource you can or any help that you can, and you need to suck it up. You need to take it in. And when you're getting that kind of information for Parkey, you had to take it on, you know. And listen, he did. There was a fear element to it, because you didn't want him to let him down. You didn't want to be on the receiving end of it.
Yeah.
But I still think you need that. And it's no, I think fear is the wrong word. I think it's respect. There was a respect there for him that he wanted to win. And he wanted you to succeed. And the harder he was on you, is the more he wanted to push you. You know, that's the way I took it anyway. So I didn't mind it. As much as it was horrible to be on the end of it, I always took it as the side of it. You know what? You're not doing that to me again. So that's not going to happen again. If that's what you want, that's what you'll get. So I would go and I would try and just carry the instruction out to the letter, because I didn't want to be on the end of it. But again, it was honest. It helped. We needed it. As young players, you need it. Because you're on the first step, you know, you're on the lowest rung of the ladder. Exactly. You need to now make up. And there's one thing about making it as a footballer and making your debut, but it's hard to stay there, because you've got the next lot of youngsters that want to come and move you out of the way. Yeah. You know, so you've got to make sure you continually develop, you continually look to learn and get better and use the resources. And that can be experienced players. We had some really good experienced players when I came through at Hibs, real good pros, as well as having good coaches and managers as well. So you've got to look at that and use that to your advantage.
What were the conversations like, Kenny, or what was your attitude like then when the opportunity comes up to go out on loan to Stenhouse Muir? And of course, I've got to get Stenny and Greg, my dad's team there, of course. But I'm interested to know what that conversation was like and what your attitude was to going out on loan, getting more game time, testing yourself. Yeah.
Well, what had happened is, because I had made my debut the year before, I had 7 substitute appearances in the season. We got relegated that year. So, and I started the last game of that season against Kilmarnock away at Rugby Park. So the following season, we were in the Division 1 at the time. So we started the season, Alex McLeish now came in. He came in towards, I think he came towards the end of that year. Never managed to keep us up. So we started the next year, strong squad, obviously heavy favourites to go straight back up. And we started the season pretty well. And if I recall right, I started a few games and made a couple of sub-appearances. I remember a game against Raith Rovers, I think it was at Easter Road. And I think we won 3-0 or 3-1. I think I never scored. I had a hand in a couple of goals. I think Stevie Crawford got a couple. I think Barry Lavetti might have got one as well. And I played pretty well. And I think it was just after that game. That might have been my second start. And I just remember after that game, Alex McLeish had spoke to me and he said that he was going to stick with the experienced players. I think Mixu was maybe just coming in at this time as well. So it was going to be another striker in the building fighting for jerseys. So I was like, yes, and that's fair enough. No problem. But again, me being the way I was thinking about thinking, listen, that's fine. That is absolutely fine. But I don't want to go back playing youth team football. I've had a taste of the first team game. That's where I want to be. I don't want to go back to playing first team football or reserve team football. I want to play first team football. So that next day, or might have even that same day, it was a Thursday. I remember it was a Thursday that I went to see Parky. And I said, Parky, what do you think about going on loan? So it was my idea. Yeah. I went to Parky to say, look, what do you think about me going on loan? And he straight away went, I think it'll be a great idea. I went, okay, how do we go about it? And he went, just leave it with me. So I came in on the Friday and he said, Terry Christie will take you. Obviously, Terry was my headmaster at school. Plus of my grammar. So Parky, obviously, I never knew this until I was actually listening to the podcast the other day. Parky obviously had a wee connection with Terry through Meadowbank Thistle, I think it was. So he phoned Terry. Terry said they'd take me straight away. So that was a Friday, and I played on the Saturday. I played on the Saturday away at Albion Rovers in my first game. I think we won 2-0 or 3-0. I scored a couple, and that was that. I was there for the next 4 months. Loved it, absolutely loved it. And what it was is, it was Division 3 at the time, but it was my mummy. You're training every week, and it's different when you've not actually stepped into the first team environment. But you're training every week, and see when you've not got that game at the end of it, and your games are through the week because that's how youth team and reserve football is. When you've got into the system of training and got your game on Saturday, you've got your game Saturday, that's what you train for, you know. So yeah, that's what I really enjoyed. And again, it was a really good group of players, experienced players at Steny. You know, we got promoted. We actually got promoted, so we played a part in achieving something that year. I think Brechin might have won the league. We finished second, but that and at that time that got us promoted to the Division Two. So it finished off, and you're playing, and there's real points at stake, you know, and things. Guys have got responsibilities, you know, that winning. It was real man's football, you know, and you were playing against some. Like I said it could be players dropping down, or it was real man's football, you know. So it was a real learning curve, and I loved it. I loved it. I was training maybe Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I was training a Tuesday, Thursday night with Steny, playing on the Saturday, which is what you want. And I really enjoyed it. I had a good spell there. And what it done was, we actually got a chance against Rangers as well. We went to Ibrox in the Scottish Cup. We played against one of my dad's teams, Whitehall Welfare, in the Scottish Cup. And initially I wasn't allowed to play because Hibs never allowed me. But then they drew 0-0 at Rosewell, at Whitehall's ground. And then the draw was done, and it was Rangers away. So they got in touch with Hibs to say, look, it's a big one for us. Could Kenny play? So sure enough, they let me play. We won 2-0 against Whitehall, and I scored the two. So I got us through into the next round away at Ibrox, which, again, that was my first venture into Ibrox, and it was a fantastic day. Steak and chips for pre-match. I think it was the first pre-match that we had that year, the only pre-match. And we got a trip to Ibrox. We got beat 2-0. Never done ourselves any harm at all with the performance. And it was a day out. But what it done was it gave Steny a good windfall out of that game, and probably looked after the club for a few years. You know, so it was a fantastic day. I really, really enjoyed my 4 years there, my 4 months there. And what it was is it actually put me, without me thinking about this, because I always thought I'm going back to play Hibs. I'm going to get experience, I'm going to score a few goals and I'll go back. But I think what it does is it kind of puts you now in a short window as well. So you're a young player at 18, 19 who is out playing and you're scoring goals and you've got certain attributes. Other teams might think, well, why is he not getting a chance at Hibs? So I think it did that. And then the next year, I went back to Hibs about February time. I started the last game of that season against Stranraer, got my first goal for Hibs.
Yep.
And then the next season, I think the under-21 rule was brought on at that moment. And then I was pretty much the furthest forward in the players who were at that age, under-21. So I was always going to really be guaranteed to be kind of in and about the first team squad for the games, and like you say, the rest history.
Yeah, I mean, you went on the following season to get promoted back into the top flight, didn't you? I think you finished top scorer for Hibs that season as well. So it sparked things for you. You touched on Ibrox as well, and it's funny, we were joking at the start about the amount we want to get through. I'm realising how far we're going through. I've barely even moved away from your teenage years. But if we kind of skip forward a little bit, of course, you get that. You talk about the shop window, you get that move to Rangers. Working under Dick Advocaat initially as a coach, what was it like working under Dick Advocaat and also going to a club like Rangers at that point?
Well, going to the club again was a dream come true to get the move. I mean, when it came about, there was a couple of wee decisions that needed to be made, but for me, there was no decision. That's where I wanted to go. And like you touched on, when you're working with a coach like that, all you're doing, and listen, managers and coaches are huge in regards to like the prepping and the development of players. And in this day and age, like the analysis of opposition and getting the team to play a certain way, it's managers and coaches are huge. But see, when you go to that dressing room and you see the list of players that you're training alongside every single day, again, going back to even when you start, you would be crazy not to learn, listen, absorb any information or bits of people's games that you can incorporate into your own to be better. You would be absolutely off your head if you never took that on. And I was only there just over a year initially, but I actually played probably more games than what I might have thought or what a lot of people would have thought that first year. Played with some unbelievable football players. I mean, I've went through this list so many times with people, and I'll probably leave about 7 or 8 out, you know. I mean, in terms of just forwards alone, you're looking at Dodgy, who was an international at the time. You had Rod Wallace. We signed Tory Flo for 12 million. You had Mikey Moles, who was absolutely electric. You had wingers like Neil McCann, Andrew Kanchelskis. Ronald DeVore came to the club for Barcelona at that time. You know, like midfielders, Fergie, up there with the absolute best that I've played with. You had Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, George Albert's two guy, Claudio Reyna, Arthur Newman at the back, Lorenzo Amoruso, Pip Perini. Like these guys were, Craig Moore. The squad was just littered with unbelievable football players. So if you go into that environment and can't become better with the coaches and with the players that you're working alongside and playing with every single day and week, then you're in the wrong game, you know. So I looked at that, I think as much... I did play quite a few games and had some highs. A real disappointing thing was that with that squad, I never won anything that year. Again, that's something that ties into a lot. I want to win, you know. I want to play a part in success and look back and think, you know, I played a part in that, you know, like whether it's winning a league or winning a cup or what have you. And I never won anything that year. And when I left, when I always went back, I always felt it was a bit unfinished business because you go to these clubs to win things. And that year, we never won anything. And it was actually probably a poor year in regards to like to what was at our disposal in terms of the players we had. It was a real poor year. So I then obviously moved on. But again, at that time, that teaches you your game has to go up again. You know, and that's another thing. You walk in, you see the way people operate on a daily basis, their daily habits, their standards, and the demand that's actually put on you to perform at that football club. You realise quickly you need to improve, and you need to improve quickly.
Without jumping away too much, we'll come back to the kind of the career path. But see, at that age, Kenny, when you are around players like that, did you see yourself incorporating that mindset into your career when you were sort of getting as an older player and you were the more experienced one in the dressing room? Did you then try to pass that on? And now, obviously, as you're going into a coaching career, is that something that you feel naturally is within you, that sort of process of educating younger players?
Absolutely. It's again, when I tried to play as long as I could, and you know, I know I still could play, but it's the opportunity came up to take on a different role, which I always said it would be the opportunity that would lead me to retire rather than me kind of wrapping it because I couldn't move anymore and then looking what was going to do next. But for a long time, I've been looking forward to being in this side of it, and I've been very fortunate that I've not had a lot of injuries, and I was still able to play and perform at 40. But since a young age, probably a good 10 years, I've always been looking at that next stage and thinking, and I've always been probably preparing as if I was in it, in terms of looking back on games and seeing where we could be better, and analysing not just my own game, but the team, and how we could be better, how we could be better, where we could be better, things that we could be doing more or less. So I've always looked at that. But when, for me, I always try to help younger players by doing everything right, you know. So that daily habits, these routines that you go through, the standards that you set in training, whether it be a warm-up, a passing drill, an 11v11 game when you're going through tactics, doing things right. You know, if it's a passing drill, get the ball past to the right foot, get it past to the back foot, or get it past to the safe side. Take care in every little detail. And that was something I've been absolutely massive on. And even now as a coach, when I see players not going round the cones at warm-ups, it absolutely drives me insane. It's there for a reason. See, if you're going to cut it short a foot or 2 feet that time, you're not going to go that foot, 2 foot, that yard in the game. You know, for a teammate, it's just daily habits and standards that you just get used to doing them, you know. And it's that kind of stuff. I always tried, and I was massive on young boys, and I still am. Whether I was, I'd always say, look, get around the cone, do it right. Listen, you do your wee fun relays, and everybody cheats in the relays. You know, everybody cheats. I cheat as well. We try and win the game. You want to win it. But always just do it right. You know, do it right. Maintain yourself. Because that's a lot of younger players, and I felt like that. I did feel like the old Money guy who would always be probably saying the same things, but it's trying to get them to realise it makes a difference. You know, it might be a tiny wee percent or half a percent, but it's going to make a difference, you know, and it could lead to us winning. It could ultimately lead all these wee percents. If you take it for each player, it could make a big difference on a Saturday. If you've got that collective mentality, then you've got a chance to go and win a game on a Saturday, you know.
It's interesting, Greg, isn't it? Because you and I speak a lot about, we try to go into different things when we're on this podcast about what, you know, coaches can learn from this or coaches can learn from that. That, when Kenny talks about it, is probably one of the messages we've not spoke about as much, but is probably one of the simpler and most effective ones, is setting standards and how important that is. That is crucial.
I know, setting standards is absolutely crucial. You know, he talked about the move to Rangers, and the daily standards and the habits and the routines that all those players maybe had, that, you know, he was able to take his career further. And what's fascinating for me is that ability to reflect and look back on it now and see what an impact that had on his career. You're doing things then that prepares you better for the future, rather than, you know, try to do it retrospectively, by which time it's too late.
Yeah. Of course, Kenny, as well, when you make that move down south, you obviously got that move to Wolves, working under Dave Jones at the time. And then, of course, I think you worked under Glenn Hoddle later on in your spell, didn't you? So, two managers there at a level of the game where you must have very fond memories, and I've learnt a lot as a profession.
Oh, absolutely. We had Wolves was a really, really good move for me at that time. Again, initially on loan, and then it turned into a permanent transfer. The reason I did is because I started 2 and a bit games for Wolves, because I had a couple of sub appearances when I first went down, and then I started 2 games, scored, and in the third game I broke my collarbone against Notts Forest at Molineux, and it was off the back of that, and I'd really enjoyed it, but I think the fans had really took to me. Again, I started pretty well. I'd been playing pretty well over the course of the 4 or 5 appearances. And Sir Jack, Dave Jones wanted to sign me, and Sir Jack had backed him. And a deal was agreed with Rangers, and it was up to myself. Again, even whilst I was injured, they were going through that process. So again, as a footballer, you want to feel wanted, you want to feel valued. And when they done that, I thought, you know, as much as I really enjoyed it, and it was a brilliant group of players at Wolves, it really was, real tight-knit, one of the best I've been involved with, actually. And It just felt right at the time, and obviously I've actually spent 5 seasons there with an initial loan spell, and then the 4.5-year deal I signed when about the December time. I spent 5 seasons there, and brilliant memories. Again, played with some fantastic football players, big influences again when still a young player in the game. I've moved on twice at this point, but still you're always learning, still learning now, but at that moment you're still learning and you're still trying to figure things out and always become better. And when you sign players, we signed Paul Ince and we signed Dennis Irwin at the same time. They came into the football club at that time and huge influences on that team, but also on, we had a really good group of young players at that time as well. There was Jolyon Lescott playing at centre back, who went on to have an incredible career. Lee Naylor was at left back, who was again had a brilliant career. Keith Andrews was a young midfielder in there, who went on to play numerous times for his country as well. So there was a lot of young, including myself as well, there was quite a few good young players in about the place that time. So they guys were huge in the development of us young boys as well. And Ince, just an absolute winner. Was brilliant for the team, brilliant for the young boys. Dennis played at Man United for all the years, international football for so many years, like a different influence because of their characters, but yeah, the same importance of what they brought in. It's no coincidence the first year they came in, we got promoted. You know, we kind of fell down the season before and with the last 10 games, where really the wheels came off. And it made it real worse for the Wolves fans and the Wolves people. That was West Brom that pipped us because it's your arch rivals. But the following year come and we're going for it and we've seen it through. And Ince and Dennis were huge to that. I mean, they're really good players, you know. Colin Cameron was there at the time, Alex Ray, Scottish boys. You had some real good players. Mark Kennedy, wonderful player. Sean Newton, Nathan Blake. We had some really, really good players, but they guys really brought it together and they brought that mentality to the group that, listen, we're, by hook or by crook, we're going up, you know, and we got there through the playoff final. It was a fantastic experience to go through that.
I can only imagine, to be honest, Ken. It sounds it just when you hear it. But one of the things that you touched on there was the calibre of player you're playing with, particularly international level as well. Some of these guys that you've been playing with, the things they did for their country. Of course, we haven't really spoke about what you've done for your country. I mean, one of Scotland's all-time top scorers, 6 on our list, and the amount of appearances you made, 69 caps, I believe, as well. So yeah. Some of the managers you played under at Scotland level, you also had the experience of playing under at club level as well. How much did the international scene develop you as a professional?
Well, you know, international football gives you the opportunity to build a profile. You know, like if you're an international and you're doing it on that stage, and you've got it's only going to enhance anybody's career if you can go on and perform. You know, but out with that, it's every young player's dream. You know, I mean, where I look back on, and obviously really, really disappointed in regards that we never ever made that major finals, because when I remember sitting back and watching Euro 96 and World Cups going by, that you watch the players and you watch the teams going to that and experiencing that. When you set out as an international foot, you want to play at a World Cup. Yeah. You know, that's it. You want to make a World Cup, and we never done it. But like you said, had some really good things. Loved every single minute of going away and meeting up with the team, and whether it be meeting up with players you've not seen for a while or ex-teammates that you played with, but you've moved on or they've moved on. I just loved representing my country, you know, and that, again, that's something that would never leave. And when I decided to retire, honestly, it was such a big decision, but it was only based on logistics and coming back and forth to Vancouver at the time, you know, and it wasn't down to any other reason. The fact that it was becoming tough on the body, but also with the family, when you're having to leave, like, I'm missing kids over and somewhere on their own for 10-day trips and things. And I actually picked up a few injuries off the back of the amount of travelling and things that I was doing. When you get to that kind of older age, it's no ideal when you're doing these kind of miles back and forth, long haul. So I felt I owed it to Vancouver to really commit myself to them for the time and put all my efforts into that. So that's why it was. But I missed it. I missed it for day dot. And I've no doubt I would have added to that tally had I decided to keep on, because, I mean, I finished off in it was a poor result. It was a wee high not getting a goal against England at Wembley in the first game against England for a number of years, and that'll always go down as probably one of the best goals I've scored. You know, it was a real fond memory, and to finish it off that way, despite the result, because again, I'm always about the result and wanted to win, and we should have got, as much as a friendly, we shouldn't have got beat that night. Yeah. But it wasn't a bad way to kind of finish off, but I did miss it. Every trip it was away, I did miss it, you know. So, but I love my time. Like I say, I love my time. Scored some good goals, some important goals. again, it takes you all over the world. You play in some fantastic stadiums and take you some places you would never ever be if you weren't involved in a national team setup, you know. So it was a real, I mean, it was about 13 years, probably 2000 to 2013. Yeah. Real good times, you know. And I say the only disappointment is that we never made that finals, and it's went so close a couple of times.
Yeah, particularly as I know, I think back to some of the football we've played under these managers you've played under, you know, Strachan and the likes, and of course you played with Gordon Strachan at Celtic as well as internationally. And I mean, when you think about it, yeah, a brief spell at Celtic, but you know, lifting the Scottish Cup, you achieved a lot in one short spell at Celtic as well, didn't you, under Strachan?
Yeah, well, what it was is when you had Alex as a team manager and a national team manager, I had Walter obviously as the national team manager and club manager and Gordon as well, and all of them quite similar in their traits and how they go about their business. Excellent man managers, excellent tactically. Really enjoyed working with them all. And that's the thing, these are the kind of guys that like you look to now when you're in this. Again, like you said, like Greg was touching on before, like even at the time, my mind's thinking that, right, I would do that, I wouldn't do that. And the stuff that you wouldn't do is just as important. You know, it's just as important as the stuff you would do, because I think in this day and age, how kind of football, like there's nothing that's been done now that's not been done before in football. You know, the game's a game. But where it's changed is the mentality of players has changed, I think. Obviously, society's changed. It's a different era completely that we're in. The analysis side of it, the prep side of it is a lot, there's a lot more detail given these days. And I was always thinking at that moment that these are real things that you've got to take on board. And yeah, to be success, and it was Walter had done it. But Walter came in off the back of Bertie Vaux. And really, Bertie was good. Bertie was really good at what he just never, the thing you need to do is get a group believing, and you need to get a response. You need to get the response for the group, and it just never seemed to click. And that goes for a number of coaches and managers that I've played with over the years. But Walter seemed to come in, and I don't know if it's because of who he was and the aura that he had. He just seemed to have it straight away. And you know what? Some people have got it. You know, some people have got it, and he's got it, and he's got an abundance of it. He just seemed to have the respect, when you've got a group of 23, 24 guys who are coming off, you're in that national team setup, you are the elite in that country, you know. So everybody's probably going to be playing for their teams, and they're going to be performing well if you're getting the chance to come away with the national team. So everybody that comes probably feels they should be playing, you know. Yeah. But like any team, only 11 can play. Only 11 can start. At that time, only 7 could be on the bench. So there'd also be maybe 5 or 6 guys sitting watching. Yeah. But Walter seemed to just find out, and that's football, you know, it's football. It's not about any individual or even the 11. It's about the team, it's about the group, it's about the squad. But Walter, he just seemed to, any kind of wee snipes and any kind of wee people moping, it just seemed to get eradicated for the squad straight away. Yeah. And it was a real, real good group. And I heard going into the World Cup there, Gareth Southgate talking about the club mentality within the England group. It was a young, hungry group, and they were trying to create this culture and this mentality, yeah, within the group. And it was, we had that there with Walter, you know, and it just happened. Like I said, there was a real effect, a real response that we got the minute he came in, and it was good. I mean, like I said, I enjoyed every trip away, good ones and bad ones. It was always good to represent your country, but at that moment, something just seemed to click, and it's no surprise that campaign that we had, but finished with that glorious failure against Italy. Obviously, Walter had left at that point, and then Alex McLeisher came in, but he just carried on that work. Again, similar values, similar traits that both had that keep that. And again, if it was me, I would want to continue that work as well. You know, if it's not broke, you know, like, it's, I mean, it's not all times. There's sometimes an exception where a manager leaves on a positive note, and Walter, we were on a positive note at that time, you know. So it would take a fool not to just continue that kind of work on, and the blueprint was there, particularly for that campaign, and Alex came in and put his own spin on it, and he carried it on, and like you say, we got some wonderful results that campaign, obviously, namely France home and away, that last game against Italy, we beat Ukraine, Like they were the World Cup finalists going into that. We're in our group plus the quarterfinalists in Ukraine, and we took it so close, you know. So I mean, again, all ended up in a failure and disappointment. But if nobody would have gave you a chance in that group at the start of that campaign. If you said you could have taken it to the last game, and if you beat Italy at Hampden, you're there. Every single person would have taken that, and that's what we had. That's what we had on the table. So it was, and we were very unfortunate that day.
We were. I remember. I know. It's one that I look back on with an element of frustration, and just, you know, so close, wasn't it? But Greg, I just want to touch on something Kenny spoke about there, and it's almost kind of gone full circle to when we were talking about Kenny's early stages of his career. But that respect that these managers had and these coaches that Kenny's worked with throughout his career, that's such a big element of the game that I'm sure, I think Kenny touched on it as well. Some people just have it. I guess it's quite a natural quality for a coach to have.
Habits and routines and standards that those guys set, and that's what allows them to have it, and that's what allows the players, are supposed to, I think, put the coach or the manager on that pedestal. If they're diligent in what they do, if they set those high standards, then that is what essentially is going to set them apart from others that are a little bit, shall we say, haphazard or not as well prepared, not as well presented. And, you know, it's those, as I say, it's those standards, Lewis, and I think that's what allows you to have it, as you say, and demand that respect from players. So it's that kind of holistic approach to, whether it's a training session, whether it's a team meeting to go through analysis, whether it's the end of the year player of the season night, whatever it is, you know, those standards are always set, and those standards are always meant through everything that you do.
Absolutely, yeah, and obviously, Kenny, we've touched on a lot of big parts of your career and big moments in your career. We haven't gone through everything as we've mentioned, but you know, you played in the Premier League with Paul Jewell, for example, with Derby. We haven't gotten to that yet, but I guess if we look at your professional development as someone now in coaching, was there a clear point in your career, maybe when you were sort of coming towards the end of your playing days? I know, obviously, you were player manager at Livingston for a spell, but before that, when you were thinking, yeah, this is what I want to be as a coach, or is it something that constantly develops through your career that you learn little bits from everybody you play for?
Well, I think you do learn. Like I said, you're always looking to look at, take the best bits out, and again, still learn for the stuff that's not so good. Yeah. And I've been pretty fortunate. I mean, you touched on Glenn Horrell before. I mean, he was a wonderful coach. Real wonderful coach, I would say probably ahead of his time a little bit. I mean, in regards to the detail and the planning and the work he put in on how he wanted us to play, he was doing that. Must have been 2004, maybe 2004, 2005-ish that he came in. And that's 15, 16 years ago now, and he was doing all that stuff then. You know, so all the when you hear all the podcasts and you listen to the top coaches talk about how they go about their business, Glenn was doing it back then, and it was wonderful to work with a real education, and he still played, he still trained with us as well. He was an incredible footballer still. So learnt a lot of him, and obviously I've touched on Walter, Gordon, real, real good guys. Of late, even again, sometimes when coaches or managers succeed, it's easy. You just think, oh, he must be good. But what I've seen as well is some people that do have success are not necessarily where. Listen, what I would say is every coach has their own way, you know, and there's no right way or wrong way. There's more than one way to skin a cat. I'm a big believer in that. I think there's a certain way that things should be done, but that's me, you know. Yeah. And of late, I've worked with a lot with Gary Caldwell at Partick, for instance.
Yeah.
A good friend of mine, and he would know, I would never just say this just because he is a friend, because if he was rubbish, I would tell him he was rubbish. But we played each other, club and country, for a number of years, and he's absolutely outstanding in what he does. He's been very, very unfortunate with a few of the roles that he's taken, it's not quite worked out. So of late, I learnt a lot of him. The manager I'm working with at the moment now is his assistant, Carl Robinson. Known him for 20 years, played with him at Wolves all the years ago. Yeah. Worked with him as a coach and a manager in Vancouver, and I'm now his assistant at Newcastle Jets. Very, very good. Learning again in terms of the preparation, what goes into get the detail that we go into every single day on what we're going to do training-wise. I mean, we're in there. It's been real mentally draining now. You know, you're in there and you're constantly looking at opposition. And because we're a smaller club, we don't have the analysts and we don't have a lot of resources that maybe you've had at bigger clubs. So we'll be doing it ourselves. So we'll be doing the analysis, constantly looking at the opposition, how we can hurt them, where they could hurt us, how we can stop them. putting these kind of, these wee 8 minute, again, Greg will know all about this, but it's new for me. All these wee 8-12 minute videos that you see watching it, when you come into an analysis meeting, it's done, it's 8-12 minutes. That's taking you 8-10 hours to actually get that prepared, the amount of footage and things that you've had to go through. And it's great, and I'm really enjoying it. But that was, so to answer your question, right, it's just bits and bobs from everybody. You know, I mean, I've always known I've worked for probably for 10 years, 12 years. I remember sitting at Cameron House with Gary Caldwell talking about football, with Alan McGregor. And we're even talking about then about things we would be doing if we were the manager. And it's interesting to see how, like I say, the game, there's nothing that will get done in the game that's not been done before. But it's how the mentalities and has evolved and how the player has evolved. And like you say, again, going back to the ground staff days, that gave you a real grounding in the game. The guy that you don't do that anymore. So to an extent, the academy setup is probably a bit spoiled. Like, they don't get that grounding and maybe that appreciation of what it is as a footballer. But that's changed. So you need to accept that. So there's now you need to find a way. It's not just that harsh, these harsh, honest words sometimes. You need to find a way. And I think players need to be treated firstly. Yep, they're players and they need to perform for you. But as human beings, as people, you need to work out what makes them tick. And everybody's different. It's the old cliche, it's an arm round or it's a kick up the backside. Well, it's a lot more complicated than that, you know. It's a lot more complicated than that now. So, particularly the way like the world's going, you know. So it's that's one thing, again, that's been really, really clear to me over the last 3 or 4 years. And I've actually been through some real kind of tough situations that have just really reinforced that view that, firstly, you need to treat people properly. You know, you need to treat people properly and be a good human being, be a good person first, despite being a manager who wants to win or a coach who wants to win, and you want things done properly. You need to treat people right. You need to get, I mean, respect's earned. You know, respect's earned. You don't just get it. You may have a bit of an aura, or people might listen and sit up and take notice, but you learn respect. You know, you learn respect by how you treat people, by how you go about your business. Are you good at what you do? Once if you're good at what you're doing, you can start to see the things you're working on come to fruition, then you'll get the belief and the confidence in the group. And that's, it's huge for any coach, any manager. You need your players. You know, you need your players. So it's not just about winning games. Yeah, that's massive. But I think to really have the group, the environment, the culture that you want, you need to build relationships probably more so now with players than what you did maybe when I started out 15, 20, 25 years ago. So that's something that's become really evident. Along the way, yep, picking all the good bits, the bad bits from certain coaches that I've worked with. Mark Warburton was great. He was another real influence on how to go about that kind of thing, the treatment of people. Obviously, he came from a different background, so he was trying to incorporate things that he'd done in his he always called it his past life and in his football life, and it was wholly based on treating people right, performing, setting standards, because he had high standards in what he used to do. I mean, he could tell you story after story about having to make X amount of millions or billions of dollar deals that it had to be done every single day, and you need to be working together as a team, you need to be treating people properly. And he tells some great stories for that side of life as well. So he was a massive influence on, well, particularly on that side. Again, I think there is a balance. I mean, Greg touched on it again, does these kind of things miss now, which like the ground staffs, the YTS, the jobs, that's it, absolutely. But I also think, and I touched on it before, when I had an involvement with the Rangers 20s, and it's an academy setup now, it's away from the older setup, it's an academy setup, I just felt that we really built players up way too early. Like, yeah. I've seen so many players come through and I'd hear, oh, this guy's going to do this guy's, and I would be like, he's 16. Like, why are we telling them they're going to be, like, they've got to earn the right to, for firstly, even get the opportunity to train with the Rangers first team. Like, you know, like, there's so many steps that are away, but I just felt like that kind of harshness, that honest harshness that Parkey put on us. And if you could go through the list of what Parkey's produced, your Scott Browns, your Stephen Whitakers, your Kevin Thompsons, your Radins, your O'Connors, like, that Hibs conveyor belt, an absolute conveyor belt of Stephen Fletcher's, all these guys that were coming through, Mark had a hand in them all, you know. And they were all getting that grounding, you know, all getting that education and what it was. And whether it's harsh, and like, Park is smart enough to know he needs to evolve. And if he talks about that as well. But you can be honest without being harsh. And I just felt that there was a few things that definitely would have been back in the day, that maybe that honesty and maybe a wee bit more realism of where younger players were actually at in their development, I think that would have helped them more than telling them how good they were. Yeah. And oh, you're going to be this, you're going to be that. I felt it would have been far better to maybe, you don't need to tell them that. You can give credit where credit's due, but they need to learn the game first. They need to understand the standards, the demands, what it's going to take to play there. Because at that age, you don't. It's as simple as that, you don't. You need to be taught, and it's these guys are in the head of the academies that are, it's their job to do that. You know, I just felt that kind of side of it, that honest thing that Parky gave us it's probably went out a little bit more. So I think there's a good blend of treating people absolutely with respect and fairness and treating everybody equally, but also still giving them the best chance by being honest with them, you know. And that's something I think has definitely changed over the years.
An interesting one I want to put to you, Greg, is what Kenny's talking about there and that grounding that players get from a young age. When Kenny's talking about the coaching capacities in just now, you know, putting in all the hard graft when it comes to analysis and everything like that, and in a very different capacity, I guess. It's a good grounding for a coach, isn't it, what Kenny's going through just now, to be going through these sorts of processes when he has to put all the hours and the shift in to get to where he is?
I'm not sure you're ever that well prepared when you do get a job. You know, coach education, I've spoke about it, I'm honest enough to speak about it. I think that coach education can only give you so much. Until you're, you know, it's like getting a degree and then becoming an accountant. Until you're in the real world, then it can be completely different. You know, look at the situation we're all in just now. For example, there was no coach education module that ever told you how to plan for coronavirus, how to manage players through that kind of period of time. Kenny spoke about, you know, some experiences he's had, you know, maybe the administration times at Rangers, you know, how did Alan McCoys, for example, deal with that? You know, those things aren't covered in coach education curriculums. You know, players in fighting and clubs or whatever might happen, somebody might fall out in the training ground. All those things, yes, you can do scenario-based learning, but a scenario is a scenario. It's not real life. So you're right, all those experiences and everything stack up. And then once you do get that job, you know, and you listen to Kenny there talking about, you know, all the things that he's taken, all those qualities and traits that he's taken from those different managers. You know, he's talking about building a culture, building appropriate team and group dynamics, creating an appropriate winning and learning environment, treating people properly, maintaining those high standards. It's just, the list is endless. And as he says, all that compounds and becomes very, very mentally draining, just because you've got so much to consider to try and get that little percent or two extra that's going to hopefully get you a win at the weekend and keep you in a job. It's a tough environment.
Yeah. I'm sure, Kenny, you can shed a bit of light on that, when obviously you've enjoyed a very good start to life in coaching out in Australia. You mentioned you only lost one game in your first seven, you won four, won two. It's an incredible start. Adds to the frustration of this pause or shutdown that we've got on us at the moment. But when you're thrust into that environment, as well as it's going well for you at the moment, was there a shock to the system? I know I touched on, you know, the playing management spell at Livingston and stuff like that, but this, when you're fully in the coaching side, was it everything you expected, or was it even more than that?
No, I said again, I've been preparing for a long time, you know, so it's like Greg says, when I went in at Livingston, everybody in their auntie would be telling me I couldn't do it. You know, you can't be a player manager. You can't do this. You can't do that. And I was like, well, why not?
Yeah.
You know, why not? Like, I wanted to keep playing. But it was a fantastic opportunity.
Yeah.
And this one, again, you've just got to look at, see if you can, if you know what you're doing and you're good at what you do, then you can work out how you're going to need to move things forward. So for me, when I went in at Livingston, I knew a couple of the players and spoke to them in length about what the group was, about what the team was, what the club was. And it was quite evident to me that we had some really good players. The first day I was in training, I knew the group was unbelievable. It was so, so tight. It was unbelievable. And I knew that alone would allow us. I knew Livingston wouldn't get relegated. I knew it, because the group alone, added to the fact that there's some really good players. You've only got to look at the lads that have moved on since. You've got Declan Gallagher, who's captain Motherwell, was an international. You've got Liam Kelly, who I knew when he was a kid at Rangers, came through. I know everything about him. What a wonderful human, wonderful goalkeeper. But he's got a great football brain, and he can play. I wanted to play. So I had him in goals. Craig Halkett, again, knew him as a kid. Knew him as a kid at Rangers. Wonderful football. Would have been an international had he not been injured. There's no doubt about that. He would have had an opportunity had he not got injured at Hearts. Sean Byrne, right in the midfield, wants to play football. Great, great footballer. These guys are, like, I went in and the minute I seen it, I thought, we've actually got really, really good players as well, despite the group. There was a game, it was the Challenge Cup, I think. It was when the Colts teams are put into the Challenge Cup. So I think we were playing Forfar at Livingston there. And it was at night, or Tuesday night or whatever. And I came to watch the game. And every single first team player was in the stand. Watching the, but there was a few first team boys were playing in the game, and every single one of them was in the stand, and I just thought, like, that's incredible, you know. Like, there's been big deckies for Dundee, so he now needs to get from Livingston to Dundee after the game to maybe come back down and train the next day. But they all stayed. I think they went and had a game of table tennis. They went out for an Andos or whatever together. They all stayed together and all came and supported the boys. And I just thought, you know, that's an incredible group mentality to do that, to support the two or three lads that are playing in the game. Yeah. And again, you add that to the really good players, and you add to the belief that I had. Like, so I knew early that my defensive unit was pretty set. Always knew how I wanted to transition the team. So again, in regards to being thrust into things, Greg says, you're never prepared, because you don't know. If you've not been in it, you never know what you're going to have to deal with off the field, behind the scenes, what players get up to, blah, blah, blah. Again, as long as you can treat them properly, you can deal with them. I mean, players need to understand when they've overstepped a line, you know, and there needs to be repercussions on that. But as long as you go through it properly, you're always going to maintain that level of standard within your group, you know, because what you also can't have, you can't have somebody abusing it and getting away with it, because then that detracts away from what you're telling the rest of the group, you know. So that group is great. Now, like you say, now that I'm in it on this side of it, and I'm not a manager, I'm an assistant manager. So but the role's different. I'm there as a part of the support network to the manager to take as much of the strains and pressures, all that stuff that he needs to deal with away from the field. I need to try and help take as much as I can away from him, or as much as he wants me to take away from him. But the good thing is about it is we've known each other a long time, so we can sit and we can throw back and forward. The hard thing for me is I need to back down. I need to back down because he's the manager. It's up to him at the end of the day. But we've been working, it's been going great. But we've got the support of really, really good people within the football club. We've got a Scottish CEO who will do, Laurie McKenna, who will do whatever he can to help us and provide us with what we need to try and move the thing forward. Obviously, like every league in the world at the moment, it's a bit up in the air in terms of finances and TV deals and what's going to be available. But I've no doubt when we get back eventually that if we need things, it'll go to the end of the earth to try and make it happen. So even that's real, real refreshing to have that kind of support behind you. So it's really, really enjoying the work. Really, I am. And like I said, it helps when you're seeing the things you work on day in, day out coming to fruition, because, like I said, the manager's very, very good. Really, really good. He had a real successful spell in Vancouver that I knew him well from. I've known him a long time, and I knew he'd be a success. And I believe that I could maybe add something to his, like I could be another string to his bow. And it's been going really, really well at the moment. And they say it's been frustrating and it's had to come to an abrupt end. But obviously, there's more important things in life than football sometimes. And you just need to make sure that we get back all safe and everything's ready for us to go back, that we can do it safely.
Yeah. Greg, there's so much that we've probably not been able to go into here, but so much that we have spoke about. We touched before we started recording it. You know, the future for Kenny, he's done his A licence back in 2015, potential for pro in the future, stuff like that. I guess from your coaching side of things, hearing all this from Kenny must just be, well, how much do you want to get into? How much do you want to summarise that?
No, absolutely. It's just, it's kind of, you don't know, you're right, you don't know where to start, Lewis. But yeah, you know, we really do hope we see Kenny on a pro licence in the not too distant future. You know, the next one starting January 2021. And if this period of time's taught us anything, it's taught us perhaps about distance learning, and you know, you will need to put that to UEFA and hope that, you know, that maybe that distance between ourselves and Kenny holding that job down in Australia doesn't become a barrier, because it'd be a tough one to return every 6 weeks or 8 weeks for a pro licence. No, it'd be wonderful to have them. But the big thing for me on any course is that you've got an appropriate learning environment, and the learning environment's only as good as the people you put in it. And if you can put somebody like Kenny in that learning environment, you know, alongside other people that have maybe got the same kind of experience, then you've got a wonderful starting point, because no matter the level of the guest speaker, you know, or the expert that we would bring in to speak to them on the pro license course, then those guys then kind of align that to the experiences that they've had in the game, and that starts the debate and that starts the chat, and that's where the, as you say, maybe the real learning comes from. So no, it's absolutely fantastic to hear about them. I've got screeds of notes here, you know, about how everything does align to coaching, and I just hope people that are listening in pick that up. You know, it's been given his very extensive and successful playing career, it's been difficult to, you know, to really get into some of the nitty gritty, if you like, of the coaching work that he's now embarking on. But you know,
we can always do a part two. We can always do a part two, Greg.
I know we're joking about it, but I mean, when I'm looking through, you know, when I was preparing for this, Kenny, there's stuff here that we've not really touched on, your time out in Canada or Turkey. You know, we've not really spoke about that set, the spell at Rangers that, you know, coming through with, you know, McCoys that Greg touched on briefly earlier. But there's so much that, in terms of learning experience and for coaching and for just to really flesh out this podcast, there's so much more we could go into. I guess there is scope for another part to this, hopefully. We'd love to have you back on.
It's an absolute, because the one thing, again, I was just thinking about it the other day, that when you look at, I mean, again, it's not been planned. Opportunities arise, and then you make decisions based on what's in front of you. But when I look back, I've been in North America in the MLS. I'm in the A-League in Australia now. And I go to Turkey and play football in there and experience something different. You've been in Premier Leagues in Scotland and England. Played in Wales as well with Cardiff, you know. So you've been all over the place with the international setup as well. Like, so when you look back, it's a lot of experiences, you know, and that's where, like, if you're actually going through it whilst you're thinking about coaching and learning and always kind of taking things down again and keeping notes on, whether it be sessions or whether it be regimes. I always remember I was taking notes one time about when I was in Turkey, because I think we went something like 50 days without a day off. it was absolutely wild. And I was keeping notes of all the sessions we were doing. And again, I said, Mark Warburton was a big thing when he came in terms of the analysis side. We'd done analysis every day. But the way, because he was always big on people treating people properly, and yeah, he wanted demands, but he wanted done in the right way. We'd done analysis every day, but he was always keen on the feedback, the players' feedback. So it's like Greg says, when you put something out there and you've got good people in the room, that's where you can create debate or you can create discussion. Which, I mean, communication's key. Again, in terms of dealing with people and treating people right, all comes back to communicating, you know. You need to speak to people to find out what they're about, what makes them tick, what's their family like, is everything away, off field, is everything okay? You need to look at every single aspect of the person to get the best out of people on that daily basis, whether it be the training field or a game. So, Warbs was massive on that, like with the analysis and the dialogue. To become better, because his whole thing was to come in here. It's a wonderful training environment, Murray Park. You know, you're coming into one of the best. You've got to be better. You've got to leave the building better off than when you came in. And that could be whether it be you're working on stuff on the training field individually or as a team, or that could be in that analysis room where, as a group, we are communicating to find out maybe, listen, that never worked. Why did it not work? Like, and it's not just a case of, like, again, it's no. If you get beat, it doesn't mean to say you've not done the job. You know, we've maybe just been unlucky or things have went against you. So we had a way of working, and there was a process. I mean, you want to win. You know you want to win. Absolutely. But it's how you're going to win. You know, it's how are we going to win. You can't just say we want to win, because everybody wants to win. But it's the work that we're going to be putting in Monday to Friday that's going to give us the best chance of possibly winning. And see, when you don't, it doesn't mean to say that work's wrong. It maybe just means things went against you that day, or a refereeing decision went against you, or somebody made a mistake and you got punished. That another day you wouldn't get punished. So we had a good way of working that. It was just disappointing how it started the following season, because we were on the right paths. But it was huge. It was huge on that communication, the analysis. It was real. It was, the analysis was ramped up massively when he came in, and it was, again, hugely important in terms of post and pre-game prep. and looking at how things have worked and or how they've not worked, and then maybe making it better. So that was loads of experiences from all over the globe, you know. So it's, when you look back on it, you can look at things, and that's where you can try and put your own thoughts, philosophies, ethos, whatever you want, into what you want to be as a coach or a manager. And so it's been a whirlwind of a journey. It's only going to continue.
Exactly. No, you're right, and that's a fit note to end on, because it's only going to continue for you as you continue on this path in the coaching world, Kenny. And as I said, we'd love to have you back on to delve into this more, but also it's going to be great to see how things develop in the future for you, and all the very best out in the A-League from myself, and I'm sure Greg will echo those sentiments as well. It's been a pleasure having you on the podcast.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover, and to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.